Welcome to Women on Air, a weekly show about women, feminism, and social justice, brought to you by CFUV's Women's Radio Collective.
You are listening to CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. We also stream online at cfuv.uvic.ca. And this is Women on Air. We're going to just start off with a song by Coke Weed. I have an interview coming up with Jennifer Nielsen, who is the founder of Jill and Jack Kids clothing line. So we're going to talk to her about her business. Hi, Jen. How are you doing?
Good, thanks.
First, can you just tell me a little bit about what Jill and Jack Kids is?
Sure. It's a new social enterprise, and we make playtime-worthy kids' clothes that go beyond pink and blue.
Okay. And so what's the story behind the inspiration for the company?
Well, it all started for me. Well, I've been sort of aware of gender stereotypes for a long time, but the inspiration for me for this project really came when I was pregnant with my daughter, and my mother-in-law came to visit. And, of course, she wanted to go shopping for baby clothes. And we didn't know whether we were having a boy or a girl. And that was pearl blue for our child, and that's sort of inevitable when you do know the gender.
Mm-hmm.
And so we went off to the store, and I went so naively expecting to be able to find red and orange and green and, you know, fun, bright colors, whether it was a boy or a girl, thinking it wouldn't really matter.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so surprised when we got there, and from outside of the store, I could see the pink section and the blue section and the dreaded gender-neutral section full of pale green and pale yellow and brown, you know. So I found it so uninspiring and so outdated, all of the motifs that were there, you know. It's just so polarized by gender, what's on offer right now.
So what is the underlying philosophy for your company?
Well, it's really all about helping kids to see the full range of opportunities that are open to them. So, and giving kids lots of options to choose from themselves, right? So the reason why we don't make things that are pink and frilly or things that are dark blue with a football on the front is that there's lots of that stuff already available. Boys who are into vehicles and sports have lots of options to choose from in the boys section, and girls who want a more fitted, slim cut and are into sparkles and ruffles have lots to choose from in the girls section. But there's really nothing between those two extremes, right? So it's really about offering something more than what's already available for kids who either aren't into what's already available or kids who want more options.
Mm-hmm. And why do you think that gender-neutral clothing is important for both girls and boys?
It's really interesting. There are a couple of other small businesses, primarily in the States, that that make gender-neutral clothing or less girly clothing for girls, but most of those small businesses don't actually offer anything for boys.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's actually a mistake. I think that it's really important that I don't think we can address gender inequality and stereotyping by only talking to half the population. So to me, it's a really important part of Jill and Jack Kids that we do offer clothing for boys and for girls. We don't actually have a boys section and a girls section like you would typically see at a store. We make clothes for kids, and kids get to decide for themselves which items they like. And it may be that one design is more popular with girls or one design is more popular with boys. But either way, it's the children that are choosing for themselves which designs appeal to them. You know, if it's a sports design, then that's fine if a girl wants it. And if it's a flower motif, why can't boys like flowers, you know? It should be up to them, not us from the outside dictating what their interests are going to be. So it's a very important part of this to help all kids see the full range of opportunities that are open to them. And we want boys that are interested in pursuing nurturing professions and that see being involved in the household and involved with their children as an important part of their life priorities. And we want to have more girls who are interested who feel like they can solve real world problems and who are interested in building and in math and in science, right? So it's really about making sure that there are options out there for boys with any different interest and for girls with any different interest in helping kids not to feel like they're limited to only the things that are traditionally seen as for members of their gender.
So how do your designs for the t-shirts reflect this?
Well, each of our, we have only 5 designs to start because we're just a brand new company, so we're starting small. But each of the designs is sort of meant to be the first in the series. So, for example, we have a shirt that has a large letter C on it, and then tucked kind of inside the C is the word creative. And the idea behind this shirt is to get people thinking about what is valuable what attributes are valuable in children differently than they do, getting adults to talk differently to children and getting children to see different attributes as valuable, right? So a lot of the times what happens, particularly with girls, is that when an adult speaks to a small girl, and I am as much a person who's fallen victim as well, we tend to take a cue from what they're wearing and speak to them about, you know, the hat they have on, or, you know, they're wearing a shirt with a horse on it, and we say, oh, do you like horses, right? We tend to take cues from their clothing, especially if it's a child that we don't know all that well, in what we talk to them about. So the Curious shirt is really meant to get adults thinking a bit differently about what they talk to kids about, and to show kids that we value traits other than just the way they look, for example. So that's one example. I can tell you a bit about the other ones as well if you're interested.
Yeah, if you could speak to a couple of the other ones, that would be great as well.
So our most popular design right now, which we have available in a kid version and an adult version, is a t-shirt with a picture of a T-Rex on it, because dinosaurs, girls love dinosaurs and boys love dinosaurs, and it's just not true that, you know, dinosaurs are boys, which is typically, you know, you only typically see dinosaur motifs in the boys section at clothing stores. But the text that is underneath the dinosaur says half of all T-Rexes were girls. And for most people, that's kind of something that we know is true, but we haven't really thought about before. And it tends to be the case that, you know, when we see movies and that sort of thing, T-Rexes are just sort of portrayed as male without really, you know, without anybody really thinking about it, because they're ferocious and they're carnivores and all of these kinds of things. So this shirt is really intended to make people pause and realize that maybe they were making some assumptions about T-Rexes, about dinosaurs, and in other areas that maybe they didn't realize that they were making, right? We all have these kind of background assumptions, and sometimes it takes something a little bit, somebody saying something a little bit out of the ordinary to realize. So I think that's a really empowering statement.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very, yeah, it's a very popular design.
So with these designs and the idea behind the gender-neutral clothing, what has been the response and feedback from both kids and parents?
Well, it's been actually overwhelmingly positive. I think a lot of parents feel very frustrated that by the limited options that are available in kids' clothing stores. And yes, it is possible to go to specialty stores and you can sometimes find things like this, but I think everyone feels like it would be nice if there were kind of a more mainstream option with a wider range of clothing. A lot of parents feel like it's great to be able to have clothes that boys or girls could wear because they have both boys and girls, and they want to be able to pass clothing down from their sons to their daughters or from their daughters to their sons. And a lot of the clothing that they get as gifts or that they find in, you know, your regular clothing store in the mall, they don't feel like their son and daughter would both be happy and be comfortable and love to wear it because it's so girly or so boyish,
mm-hmm.
right? So that's a big advantage that parents see. I took the clothing to a bunch of families and had kids try the shirts on. You can see some of the photos of kids' shirts on the websites from those meetings, and I was just so thrilled. One of our designs is it's a silhouette of two owls. There's an adult owl and a baby owl. And one of the boys who tried this shirt on, Ben, I asked him, which one was your favorite shirt? Because he tried on a bunch of them. And he said, I like the one with the daddy owl and the baby owl. And I thought that was just so cool because I think as adults, most of us would tend to think of it as a mother owl and a baby owl. When you see, you know, an adult one and a baby one, that's kind of the assumption that you make. And it was so cool that for him, it was clear that it was a daddy owl and a baby owl instead. So that was a neat moment for me.
Mm-hmm. So just to go back to your company as a whole, the title or the name of your company is called Jill and Jack Kids. And I noticed that Jill was put first. Was that purposeful? And if so, what was the motivation behind that?
Absolutely, yeah. I say sometimes, you know, it's called Jill and Jack Kids. We put Jill first for a change. And yeah, that was very deliberate. The idea is that Jack has been first for, I'm not hundreds of years. One of these days I should look that up, find out when the nursery rhyme was first appeared. But it's definitely deliberate that Jill is first. It's been a long time that Jack's been first, and it's time for Jill to take a turn leading the way down the hill. Mm-hmm. Or up the hill.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
great.
So it's definitely supposed to embody the kind of change in the way that we think about gender and changing the messages that we're sending to kids. We're changing the messages so that everybody gets a turn.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And to start your company, you've launched a Kickstarter campaign. Can you tell me a little bit about what this is and how it's helping your company?
Absolutely. Yeah, Kickstarter is relatively new in Canada, so a lot of people aren't familiar with it. What it is, it's an online platform that allows people to come together to support a project they want to see happen. So it can be used for small businesses, it can be used for fundraising campaigns and artistic projects, lots of different purposes. In my case, we used it as a way to raise the capital to buy our first batch of inventory. So it works sort of similarly to a fundraising campaign that you'd see on public radio or public television. Everyone, if you choose, you can contribute at a certain dollar value, and depending on the dollar value that you contribute, you get a reward. So, for example, through our Kickstarter campaign, at the $25 value, your reward was a kid's T-shirt, right? But that money is going to help as seed funding to launch a new business, and the people who support it because it's a business that they want to see happen. They want to have these options available for kids, and they think it's important, and so they support the campaign. So that's kind of how Kickstarter works. And we actually raised over $20,000 in just under 3 weeks through the campaign from over 450 backers who supported it.
Oh, wow. That's an amazing feat to have done that. And people can still order the T-shirts if they want to. Before, you said earlier it was June 13th, I think?
Yes, that's right. So the Kickstarter campaign has now ended, but while we're collecting all of the information on sizes and styles that our Kickstarter backers want to have as their rewards, we are able to take a small number of pre-orders through our website. So anyone who wants to participate, it's not too late. It's too late for the Kickstarter campaign, but it's not too late to place your pre-order. The way that the crowdfunding, the Kickstarter campaign works is that these orders are placed in advance. Once the campaign ends, or actually once the orders are all in by Friday, June 13th, I'll be placing a big order with the manufacturer. So anything that was ordered through the campaign or through the online store now won't be available to ship out to customers until August. But you get to be part of starting a new venture. You get to be one of the first to get one of these shirts. So I think it's definitely worth the wait. But yes, if you're interested, do get your order in by Friday, June 13th. And in addition to the other shirts that I've mentioned, we also have a shirt featuring a Fibonacci spiral. And it's the words of the spiral say, "Math is beautiful." And we have that one in a child and adult version as well. So we have the adult T-Rex and the adult spiral. And we also have a kid's shirt that says, "I love startups" on it for those mompreneurs and small business founders in the crowd.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So starting a new business is always challenging. Can you tell me about some of the challenges you faced and as well maybe a success that you faced as well?
Sure. I would say actually the biggest challenge for me has been trying to balance family life with also starting a business. Especially during the crowdfunding campaign. Running a crowdfunding campaign, it looks so easy. It's like figure skating or something, right? When they do a great job, it looks so easy when you watch the, you know, 2 or 3 minutes of them on the ice. But you know it's a lot of hard work in the background. So it was really a lot of work to put on the crowdfunding campaign, a lot of promotion, a lot of reaching out to people, a lot of long days. And, you know, thank goodness for my husband who did a lot of the childcare during that time. One of the biggest challenges for me was definitely trying to strike that balance between prioritizing what I needed to get the business off the ground, and also trying to be there for my family and participate in home life at the same time. I think, you know, anyone who has a business, works from home, can sort of identify with that particular challenge. Some of the kind of cool things that have come out of this, is some opportunities to be involved with some really great organizations that I've connected with. There are a couple of Canadian organizations that are really kind of cool, and offer lots of networking opportunities for entrepreneurs. There's the Canadian Youth Business Foundation, which has just changed their name to Futurepreneur, actually, that have been very supportive and have actually set us up with a small business loan to get us started as well. And there's also a cool organization called the CEO for Female Entrepreneurs. So instead of CEO, it's CEO. And they've actually been a great resource in terms of connecting me with people who've been in these kinds of situations before and that kind of thing. So it's been some of the successes, I think, or some of the perks of being in this situation is just the opportunity to connect with other entrepreneurs and groups that are sort of out there rooting for small businesses and helping startups out.
Another thing that I noticed while I was looking through your website and everything preparing for this interview is that your t-shirts are made in Canada, and the designs are done in Canada. Can you tell me why this is important to you as start of a business in Canada?
Yeah, that's definitely really important. So one of the things that happened, when I was telling the story before about going shopping for baby clothes with my mother-in-law, that actually happened around the time of the Rana Plaza collapse. Mm. I guess just over a year ago, and you know, I think a lot of people who heard about that garment industry disaster and some of the other ones that have happened were really touched by that and saddened by the kind of work standards and industry standards that we find overseas in garment production. And so there is definitely a pull for me in terms of social responsibility of wanting to avoid that sort of situation and not wanting to be a part of, you know, ruining people's lives in that way and in the very slow, tedious day-to-day way that it happens all the time for people who work in unhealthy conditions. So there's that, but also wanting to support the Canadian economy, wanting to keep jobs in Canada. These are all very important. And we also are as eco-friendly as we can be. Our manufacturing process all happens within a 20-kilometer radius. And unlike lots of other companies whose stuff says made in Canada, our products, our t-shirts are not only sewn in Canada, the fabric is actually knit and dyed in Canada as well, which is very unusual. A lot of what you find is made in Canada. The fabric is imported because obviously we can't grow cotton. So the fabric is often dyed overseas, knit and dyed overseas and then imported, and then the clothing is cut and sewn in Canada, and they can still say made in Canada. But ours is actually, the cotton is imported and the knitting and dyeing all happens here. So yeah, it's truly a Canadian product, which is something I'm very proud of.
So all around, it sounds like your business is very social justice oriented in a really, I guess, consumer friendly way. So what ultimately is the message that you're hoping to send to kids and parents through this clothing line?
Well, I think at the end of the day, it's really about showing kids that there are so many opportunities open to them, and that just because as a boy you don't tend to see a lot of men in certain careers, just because as a girl you don't tend to see a lot of women in certain careers, that doesn't mean those opportunities in life aren't open to you. And not only careers, but hobbies and interests as well, right? We want to encourage all children to be well-rounded. We want to encourage all children to pursue their passions, even if that passion that they have is something that is sort of unusual for people of their gender. The more people we have who are actively pursuing their true passions instead of feeling limited by their gender and not doing what they really feel like they're, you know, meant to do or what they feel most passionate about, it's just much better if people are pursuing the interests that they feel passionate about, because they're gonna work harder, they're gonna do better, they're gonna have better, more fulfilling lives. So really, that's what it comes down to.
Mm-hmm. And to support this with the launch of your Kickstarter, you were doing a blog post with interviews with people in non-traditional gender roles and jobs. What was kind of the inspiration behind that, or what did you learn from it? I guess.
Oh yeah, it's so I encourage people to check this out and actually to show it to your kids if they're old enough to read and interested. We have 22 interviews with people who work in gender non-traditional careers on our blog at jillandjackkids.com. It's fascinating. You know, one of my favorite interviews is the one with a female fire chief, and she tells a fantastic story. One of the questions that I asked in the interview series was, tell us about a time when it was an advantage for you in your career to be a woman or a man, given that, you know, being a woman or a man is atypical in your career. And there were some really great responses, and one of my favorites is the story that this female fire captain, Shelley, tells about the time when a car pulled up in front of the fire station and a man jumped out, and he said, and all the firefighters came down the pole, right? And he said, "Help, help, my wife's in labor." And all the firefighters sort of took two steps back and were like, right? And sure enough, so Shelley stepped up and she delivered a baby right there on the driveway of the fire hall. And she said that was a time when it sure came in handy to be a woman in her career. So it just goes to show that having a diversity in the group of people working in any field is a huge advantage. So that's something that I wanted. I didn't want in this interview series just to emphasize obstacles that people face when they're working in gender non-traditional careers. And I feel like a lot of these interview series kind of do that. They tend to ask questions like, "Well, what were the hardships that you faced? How was it difficult for you?" And I really wanted to emphasize ways that it was an advantage to be in a minority position in these particular careers. So yeah, it's such a fantastic interview series, and I'm really, really proud of how it turned out.
Mm-hmm. And a great resource for parents and kids, I think, as well.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope people will go and check it out and will use it for sure. And even in classrooms, that would be great. There are people from all over Canada and the U.S., and both men and women who, you know, we have a female welder, a female brewer, we have a male nurse, we have a pilot, you know, we have a full range of different careers that people can check out, and I think it's really cool.
Great. So last question, and we're just going to close off with this. How can people support Jill and Jack Kids?
Well, the best way that you can support us right now is by heading over to jillandjackkids.com and placing an order for an adult t-shirt, the T-Rex or the Fibonacci Spiral, or a kids t-shirt. We have 5 kids designs. Or we also have inspirational charms that say resilient or curious if you want to support the company but you don't necessarily need a t-shirt right now or have kids around to buy a t-shirt for, that would be great. I would also absolutely love you to look up our article in the Globe and Mail last Friday. You can read more about what we're doing there and share that on Facebook, or come and check out our social media pages. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, all of your favorites. Hmm.
Okay, great. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to talk to us. And I hope you get a lot of interest from this interview.
Great. Well, thank you so much.
So the next interview that I have is with Julie Payette, that Robin has done a couple summers ago. And she is an astronaut, which I thought fit well with our topic today of non-traditional gender roles and campaigns. So we're going to just jump right into that.
Most Canadians have watched the countdown of at least one space shuttle launch from the safety of their living rooms. Julie Payette, co-chair of the University of Victoria's 50th anniversary honorary cabinet, is one of only 2 Canadian women who have experienced it from inside a NASA spacecraft. As part of UVic's 50th anniversary, Julie Payette will give a special illustrated presentation, open to the public, on Monday, August 27th at 7 p.m. in the University of Victoria's Farquhar Auditorium. The presentation is entitled The Earth from Above, An Astronaut's Perspective, and will feature images and video footage from Payette's space flights. So I'm fortunate to be able to speak to Julie Payette on the phone today. How are you doing, Julie?
Oh, hello. Very well.
Now, you are an astronaut and a professional electrical and computing engineer. When you first started off your career, were you aiming to become an astronaut, or were you more focused on engineering?
Well, when I was a kid, I was at primary school. I was watching the Apollo missions to the moon. These occurred between late 1968 and 1972. I was a student at a primary school in Montreal, and I was watching, like everybody else, the exploit of the Americans landing on the moon and walking on the moon. And at the time, I just wanted to do the same thing. I wanted to go into the rocket and put on the spacesuit and drive the lunar rover. It did not occur to me I was the wrong nationality, wrong gender, and spoke the wrong language. But when you're a kid, you see things that you want to do, and that's inspiring. And so when I was a kid, I wanted to become an astronaut, but later I realized this was probably not going to happen, so I chose the next thing for me, which was engineering.
Mm-hmm. And then, obviously, a lot must have happened over the years, because you did end up becoming an astronaut. Was there anything in particular that happened over the years that made that change, that where you ended up becoming an astronaut?
Well, the big change was that Canada recruited astronauts. Mm-hmm. Because when I was a kid watching the Apollo mission, Canada did not have astronauts at the time. It recruited its first few astronauts in 1983, and then Mark Garneau was the first Canadian to fly in space in 1984. By then, I am in my second year of engineering.
Mm-hmm.
So this is when the goal changed, and somehow it was possible now that Canada was recruiting astronauts. So then I continued. I did my engineering. I did graduate school. I started working. And in 1992, Canada recruited its second set of astronauts. So, of course, I put my application in. Because there's very few certainties in this world, but one of them is that if you don't put your application to something you'd like to have, then you have a 100% chance of not getting it.
And this show is actually called Women on Air that we're playing this segment on, and we focus on gender quite a bit. And you mentioned that, at least previously, women really weren't seen as able to be astronauts. Did you see that change over your life, where suddenly women were able to be astronauts? And
Well, actually, I didn't say that. What I said is that I had many characteristics that did not fit the characteristics of the Apollo mission astronauts.
Mm-hmm.
I was Canadian, they were American. I was a girl, they were men. They were all military pilots, and I don't recall anybody in my family ever having been in a plane. And I spoke French only, mm-hmm. and they did not speak French, they spoke English. So it's more than one thing. It was a combination of things that made it look like it was difficult to attain. And sometimes we stop at characteristics like that. I found that in my upbringing, I was encouraged to be who I wanted to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that played a lot in my ability to say, oh, well, you know, this interests me, then I'm going in this direction, and I'm going to put effort, and I'm going to try to persevere, and I'm going to try to work hard so that I achieve what I like to achieve. And it is a milieu where the women were underrepresented, but I would say it's a milieu where Canadians are underrepresented.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's a milieu where people of French-speaking mother tongue are underrepresented. You can't stop at these considerations. The key of success in any field, I believe, is working hard and building competence. Once you're competent and you can deliver what is expected of you, and in an astronaut world, it's very, very specific, and it's also very little room for error, then you can make your way through that field.
Yeah, so that focus on one attribute is not necessarily useful and definitely doesn't determine what people can do.
And I spent most of my life making sure that that was not going to be an issue, and mm-hmm. that I am a woman, but it's not my sole definition, and there's no reason why I cannot accomplish everything else if I put, again, hard work, perseverance, and building the skills and competence necessary.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Now, I know you've made 2 space flights and logged more than 611 hours in space. Could you briefly describe what your role was on these 2 space flights?
Both those space flights were on the space shuttle, the first one on Space Shuttle Discovery and the second one on Space Shuttle Endeavour. They were 10 years apart, and the first one was a construction mission for the International Space Station, but at the very beginning of the space station's construction. So by the time we arrived, the space station was only made up of 2 small modules. There was nobody on board, and we were only the second crew to ever get there. On my second mission 10 years later, the space station was the size of 2 football fields, had 6 people permanently living inside, was a full-fledged, almost complete scientific laboratory, and we were still a construction crew. Bringing equipment from the ground to install on the station. We were participating in the very end of the construction. So they were very different missions in a way. My first flight, I was the onboard engineer with responsibility in outfitting, in particular, the Russian side of that really small space station. Mm-hmm. On my second flight, I was the flight engineer and lead robotics operator for that mission, so I got first to be part of the cockpit crew that flew the space shuttle to space and brought it back home, and also flew all the 2 Canadian arms, Canadarm mm-hmm. arm on the shuttle and Canadarm 2 on the station, and a Japanese arm as well. So I was basically a spacecraft operator and a crane operator.
The images we see of going to space in movies and media are often, I don't know, maybe a little bit romanticized. It's quiet, it's beautiful, you see the Earth. Do you think many of those images we see are accurate? Was there anything that struck you about being an astronaut on the space station that maybe we don't always get to see?
Actually, I'd have to you'd have to give me examples of what images in particular you're thinking of.
Okay.
If you watch the Apollo 13 movie, mm-hmm. About the mission where there was an accident on the way to the moon. That film is actually pretty accurate, but it's Hollywood, so mm-hmm. it's got little edges here that might be romanticized. But most of it is pretty sticks to the fact. If you see Mission Control Center, the images of that computer room where there's a lot of people behind consoles and they're watching what's happening in the mission, and you see that on the NASA television feed, that is very true to life. It is a very operational environment. There's really no room for mistakes, so lots mm-hmm. of brains and lots of talent look at the same data and make decisions in a very unified way. Inside the spacecraft itself, it's actually quite noisy because the cabin fan that circulates air is running all the time, otherwise we wouldn't be able to breathe properly. But when you float to a window and you look down at the beautiful planet Earth going by at your feet, even though it's not quiet behind you, there is a sense of being one with the planet. It's a magnificent sight. And we are traveling on the space station and inside the space shuttle at 28,000 kilometers per hour, which mm-hmm. is 25 times the speed of sound. It's very wow. fast. We go around the Earth every hour and a half. Mm-hmm. We see the sun rise and the sun set every 45 minutes. It's quite an experience, and very humbling one, too, because you realize that the only place where we humans can live right now is this planet, and we ought to take care of it because we have nowhere else to go, really. Right now.
Yeah, that's amazing visual. Thank you. And now you're going to be at UVic for the 50th anniversary celebrations. What's your role as part of these celebrations?
Well, I was granted the honor to co-chair a honorary committee for the 50th anniversary celebration. This is not an important committee other than there are people from across Canada and even the world who share the values of UVic, and we're happy to participate in the celebration. So I was very pleased to get a phone call from the president of the university asking me if I'd like to participate in the celebrations of 50 years of great work. And I already had many ties with UVic. I've been there before. I have given talks on campus before. I've brought a small piece of a spectrum from the Hertzberg Institute up the road. I have ties with this part of the country. I sit on the board of trustees of Lester B. Pearson College, not very far from Victoria. So to me, this is really important. I was very pleased. So it's an honorary position, absolutely voluntary, and I'm delighted to come and kick off those celebrations.
And what can the audience expect when they come to The Earth from Above, your presentation on Monday, August 27th?
A lot of pictures.
Oh, yeah.
And my presentation is a very, very much open to the general public. We will see the Earth from above. We will see all kinds of details we can see from on board the space shuttle, lots of pictures of the space shuttle, how people live in the spacecraft, and eat and sleep, and it's about being a spacecraft operator by profession, but also a very interested observer of the planet from that perspective, and there's a lot to learn from that.
Great. Well, thanks for your time, Julie. And just to remind listeners, Julie Payette will be giving her free illustrated presentation at the University of Victoria on Monday, August 27th at 7 p.m. at the Farquhar Auditorium. And Julie, I have one last question. Do you prefer Star Wars or Star Trek?
I actually like both.
You like both?
And it's interesting. Star Wars, I was so struck by it. You can't remember because you're too young, but in 1977 when the movie came out, the first one, and I was so struck by this idea of the universe and being able to travel at warp speed and discovering new worlds and new civilization and not being alone, which at the moment we suspect we're not and or weren't the other types of life somewhere or have been or will be. But we have no evidence of that just yet. It's coming. I think that going to Mars will probably answer part of those questions. That's what we all hope. Star Trek is also the idea of going peacefully to explore new worlds. So it's complete science fiction, but some of the ideas that were introduced by Star Trek way back when, like the cellophone type, where they would beam themselves, that they would talk to the ship from the surface of the planet. At the time, cell phones didn't exist, so it's a clever program, and I actually am a fan of science fiction. I always have, always be. It's thrilling, and I'll be right there when the next Star Trek comes out in the movie theaters.
Oh, great. All right, well, thanks for the great interview, Julie.
Thank you so much, and looking forward to being in Victoria again.
So I hope you enjoyed today's episode of Women on Air. Up first, I had an interview with Jen Nielsen, who is the founder of Jill and Jack Kids, which is a gender-neutral clothing company. So if you're interested in supporting them, their website is jillandjackkids.com. And remember, you can still get some of those great t-shirts on order. The second interview was from the Women's Collective Archive, and it was done by Robin, and it was with astronaut Julie Payette. And we just listened to two songs. One was by Basha Boulat from her album Tall Tall Shadow, and the song was called From Now On. And then following that, it was Jody Glenham with her title track Dreamer. Coming up next, we have Johnny Regalado with True North. And I hope you enjoy today's episode, and tune in next week.